8:14 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, the Park City School District Master Planning Committee meeting two more times this week to incorporate the public comment that they have received over the district's future master plan. In the studio with an update, I have the superintendent of schools, Amber Conley, along with school board member Phil Kaplan. So good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Phil, you're officially a board member, even though you haven't been sworn in?
That's correct. I'm officially a board member as of July 1, so today's day 14 on the job.
Okay. All right, so the Master Planning Executive Committee, my understanding, meeting tonight, and that's a closed meeting, and then the regular group meeting later this week. So what are they working on specifically?
Right, so what we're doing is we're taking all the input that we've received, looking at our current funding, and then putting together some, and it's continuing to be the draft master plan. So really just putting that into place.
Are we still moving forward with Scheme 3 as originally was presented?
And I'll change the verbiage of Scheme 3. It really is just the draft master plan given all the input.
Okay. Now, let's talk about what people have had to say. Some saying that the plan is flawed. At the original master planning committees, there were three of them, it was brainstorming sessions. When people asked about the cost, we were told, no, just present your ideas and what you think would be most ideal for the district. So was that a mistake now that we look back, now that we know that we're talking about things that are going to cost $100 million? Maybe if we had known what things were going to cost, we would have thought about things differently.
And I would say absolutely not. I think it's really important that we go back to why we're doing this, and this is that our buildings have reached capacity. Right now, Park City High School is over 100% capacity. Treasure Mountain's at 90%. Parley's Park, 97%. So it really is not, it is, we have to have space for our students to be able to learn. And as we look at being, you know, the top in the nation, we have to have environments that are excellent and innovative.
Yeah, we can.
And I'll just add on to that, as far as taking a visioning exercise and saying, okay, imagine, take the biggest vision we can, and then bringing that down to community needs, I think that's a really great way to forward our goal of having innovation and excellence in education, really seeing what is possible, and then bringing it back to community needs and budget.
Well, that's what I was going to say. What's affordable? I mean, certainly that's possible, but what is affordable and what is the community willing to spend? You know, it seems like we're really, though, in a rush to try and get a bond on November's ballot, but we wouldn't have to be if we pushed back the grade realignment and the all-day kindergarten program a year.
Right. So as you look at really what we have to do for our students, we can't let our buildings get in the way of that. And all-day kindergarten is absolutely crucial and I'm going to say to fix some of the issues that we have, specifically with our academic achievement gap, where our below-performing students are not meeting benchmark at the reading level in third grade. You know, and I would go back just to why we're doing what we're doing. It's not to have the best facilities. I come back to this next year, Trailside is going to have trailers in their area because we've reached capacity at Trailside. Parley's Park is next. We've done some internal modifications to the building, but it's next as well. And so our community has grown. The projections that we've had with growth the last couple of years, we've outperformed as far as the number of students that are in our district. And so we have to be, at this point, reactive to our growth.
Yeah, but again, all-day kindergarten does not have to start.
It does have to start. Why? And I'll be really passionate about that because of the learning needs of our students.
Certainly, though. But you know what? We've come this far without it. So what's one more year make a difference for? It's given that what we've got on before us is, you know, feeling really rushed.
Well, and again, I'll go back to, we have this year to plan for all-day K. So it's not starting August. It's starting the following August. And I would say even if we do put the bond on for this November for the bond election, we're still a year out to get our buildings finished. But we do have capacity as far as we could have modulars at our elementaries. We have some plans in place to be able to do what you're asking.
And I'll just add to that. As a board, we have the opportunity to move this forward this year. So why wouldn't we want to make a permanent difference in the lives of almost 400 children that'll be in that all-day kindergarten?
Other than many members of the community feel like you're moving it too fast. I'm just trying to speak for them, people who have come and said, you know, we haven't, let's say, looked at all of the options for the high school expansion. You know, we're talking about having to move Dozier Field at a cost of millions of dollars when we just put $2 million into it a couple of years ago. But I mean, there's plans like extending the science and math wings. There's plans to institute some parking restrictions, so we don't need more parking. There's talks about, you know, building over the existing preschool areas. I mean, those haven't even really been looked at in their full form.
And actually, that's what we've been doing as we meet with our architects. And when you talk about what are you doing in the closed meeting, these are the things that we're taking into consideration and coming up with a plan that is economically feasible, given our current $19 million that we have in our capital budget, and then also looking at what we absolutely have to do. I'll go back to, regardless if you know, this is not let's shoot for the stars and spend the money of our public taxpayers. It's our students right now in the high school are having to have CPR in the middle of the cafeteria because we don't have room at the high school. And that's without looking at the college and career readiness standards that they have to have as they start ninth grade. So there's so many factors playing into that. And I want to come back to also the grade realignment. We had absolutely phenomenal support for that. As we look at the grade realignment, all day K, this was met with lots of embracing from our community, very little pushback, if any at all. And so this is something our community is understanding with our needs for not only our elementary and our reading and our language arts, but our dual language, looking at our STEM and our engineering, looking at, you know, the coding programs and looking at what we're doing there for to be innovative. So this really is just the next step to again, be the best in the nation.
Yeah. And again, I'm going to go back. I mean, the school district and school board have done a grand job of being very transparent. And you folks have been looking at this for a long time. At the same time, it takes a long time to come to a boil and for the community to kind of find out. I mean, we've been talking about Bonanza Park for 5 years and people are like,
Bonanza Park,
right? So while it seems really slow to you, it seems really fast to many other people. And again, they're the ones that are going to foot the bill here. So if they're asking you to slow down, why not slow down?
It's a matter of, as Amber said, there's academic needs. And, you know, frankly, there just aren't, you know, we have the land that we have that the district owns. There really aren't that many options. So it's really a matter of making the right choices right now. And frankly, most of the price tag is driven by the capacity needs. And a lot of the optionality is frankly driven by the athletics and locations of things. And we are getting a lot of very good community input, which I can assure you the board is looking at with great diligence as we are looking at tax and financial impact.
And you know, this is something that I'll put out there as we look at the field house. And I know that really has hit the biggest resistance. We have some plans to be able to have basically option A and option B. And I feel very confident that in working with the city, the county, Basin Rec, that this is a need for this side of town. But I'm also willing to put out to the community that we're listening and that this may be something that we have to pull off until the next time around. But as we look at our buildings, and we keep saying this, as we look at our buildings and capacity as is with nothing changing, and projecting growth at 1.6, which we haven't been at 1.6 the last 3 years. 2 years ago, we were, you know, almost 5% growth. So we have to be, at this point, reactive to that.
Let's talk. So grade realignment and kindergarten are really what is driving this, and of course the dual immersion there at the middle school. I don't think there's too much controversy over the 5th-6th school there at Ecker Hill, yeah. But for the grade realignment to work, that means that the addition to the Park City High School has to be made, and that means that we have to decide what to do with Dozier because we need to know where to build the addition to the high school. That, again, coming up, people now learning about the move of Dozier Field, some prospective residents really not too happy about having the noise move closer to them. So how do you address their concern?
And that's understandable. I think with anybody in Park City, we love our space. We love what we have here, and any change to that is truly understandable. I guess too, I would go back to the point that Treasure Mountain, of what we continue to learn about the structural soundness of the building, the sewer issues, the soil issues, that needs to be put on the front as well. As that's a building that's going to cost us $23 million to fix. Not expand, not make it better, just to fix it when we can build a brand new school for $25 million. And that's something that's just a fact that we have to face.
So where do things stand then with the high school addition? I mean, you're saying that the executive committee's looking at it. Have
right.
they dismissed the suggestions
right.
and they're sticking with their
nope.
West Side expansion?
No. Nope. What we've been doing is really, truly looking at what we can do with the daycare. As you know, our daycare has reached capacity where we can be able to support our employees, because that really is a perk to our job that we have an in-house daycare system that we can move over, whether it be at the Learning Center or district office, whatever that looks like. Then, so that would open up the space there to the south. We have put together a plan, and we're really excited to be able just to continue to mold this plan, share with the master planning, the actual steering committee, because this is something the executive committee has put together. And then as we look at that, being able to move our parking, we know it's an issue. We have meetings with the city starting at the end of the week about transportation, about parking, moving that over to, of course, the east side, and then that would move our baseball fields. And so we have some really great plans given the input, being able to do some modifications to Dozier Field in the meantime to allow some locker room facilities to expand our gym. As you know, we have several neighborhood rivalries that will not play in our gym because it does reach capacity and the fire marshal will come in and shut us down. So those are just realities to what we're doing. And then I know you hear this a lot. We have nationally recognized music programs at the high school, and their facilities, they've outgrown their facilities. And so we have some plans in place to be able to accommodate our music and our fine arts, which again gets into our partnership with Park City Institute, with Sundance, with the Eccles. So there's lots of, I mean, really, it's really creative right now, and I'm excited. It's a fun time.
And I know that you've talked many times about how important it is that we keep the high school within the city limits, but are we really trying to put a square peg into a round hole here? Given the growth?
And I would say at this point, given our boundaries, given where we do have land and access to land, it really makes the most sense to keep the high school where it is.
All right. Also, wanted to ask you, I mean, is this something the Master Planning Committee is also working on? Because we've heard suggestions with the entire community moving in the direction of figuring out how to drive less. Why don't we include our youth in that and maybe just give permits for red and white days, or
right.
let kids carpool, let them take the bus.
Right. So in working with our Summit County Council, Roger Armstrong, Kim Carson in particular, coming up with some great programs for our students to do just that, to become involved. And so we already have some plans for that. Our kids are very creative and out-of-the-box thinkers and very intelligent when it comes to what they need. We're looking at what that could be, you know, incentives for them to carpool more. I know for a fact that our students living in the Jeremy Ranch, Pine Brook area, they do meet at the Jeremy Park and Ride and carpool up. But we then get into after-school jobs, after-school activities. So there are some obstacles that we need to work through.
All right. So, Phil, do you anticipate that the school board will move forward with a vote in August to put the bond on the election?
I do anticipate that. I believe that just when you look at the price tag of any likely scenario, it's going to be more than what we have in the capital account. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that being said, I think it's just really important for the community to know that we are very, you know, we take their dollars very seriously. And, you know, that means looking at the construction of each building very carefully. That means deciding which elements of the plan will move forward now versus being put off to a possible future date. But I do anticipate that we will be going forward with a bond proposition.
And do we have a number on that yet?
It's still in the range at this point. So I would, you know, there's the numbers that have been floated before.
35 to 45? Is that?
Good question, Leslie. I would say that it really is between about 35 to 50 million that where we've landed. I would go back to we are moving forward with seeking bond counsel and financial planning with the RFP process. So that'll be on the ticket as well.
Something we haven't talked about that we used to talk about a lot when we saw double-digit growth back in the 90s is year-round school. So where's that in the mix?
You know, I've been approached by this, and right now that hasn't surfaced to be a really hot topic. But I will say one of the areas that we haven't talked about lately is our later start times and how all of this is mingled in with our later start times for our secondary students and what that means for schedules. But when you talk about the growth in the 90s, it's been interesting to do the history that, you know, in 1999, this community passed a $30 million bond. And so those numbers aren't uncommon to the community.
Okay, but are we going to have the year-round school discussion? Or just because the community doesn't like it, we don't have it?
I would say at this point, not within the next 2 years.
Okay. Any other thoughts, Phil?
No, thank you.
All right. Amber Connolly and Phil Kaplan, thanks for your time this morning. News time, 8:35. On the phone with me now, I have Assistant County Manager Anita Fisher, along with Public Works Director Derek Radke. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So I don't know who's from the staff packet. We've got a proposed program to save rainwater to increase water reuse and water quality. Can either of you tell me about that? I know that we're doing something similar here in Park City.
Well, I have limited information on this. Apparently, this is a program that has been conducted by the Utah Rivers Council. And apparently, they found out last year in December, the U.S. Geological Survey surveyed residents and found out that Utah has the highest per-person water usage in the county. So the Utah Rivers Council, the representative is Nick Shao. He would like to come before the county council and discuss this rain harvest program. It's a way for citizens to save their rainwater to lessen the usage of culinary water.
Park City Municipal is offering subsidized rain barrels to residents. Is that something the county would be interested in doing as well?
Possibly. This is, to my knowledge, this is the first time that they've heard about this program. So, it'll probably be a discussion where they'll look at all their alternatives.
All right. At 4:45, an update on transportation planning in the Snyderville Basin. They'll turn this to you, Derek. So what are the major goals this year, then, for transportation planning? I'm assuming the Kimball Junction Transit Center, since we're scheduled to start that.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be the primary, or that's our first project that we're kicking off, and it's set to go before the Planning Commission tonight for an new conditional use permit. That's the first project. We're also doing an alternative transportation marketing program. The city and county, Park City and Summit County, are jointly putting together a marketing program with Penna Powers, and we're in the initial stages of developing a scope of work. The goal is to try to educate and influence our residents and guests to use alternative transportation, you know, one time in 10 or once a week or something like that, to kind of take the pressures off of some of our transportation systems. We're also doing a wayfinding project. Our county engineers and our county health department and community development department have been working with LandWorks to come up with a wayfinding program that's, you know, signage and identifying type markings that help get people around the basin. And then we're also working on some other projects, but those are the key ones that we'll talk about.
All right. So back to the Kimball Junction Transit Center. I mean, I've been asking for a while now that the funding is about $2.3 million, and that's coming from where?
So we get $1.7 million is from the FTA, the Federal Transit Authority. $500,000 was budgeted by the county council for 2015, and $95,000 was converted from some transit monies by Park City Transit to cash to help pay for design work. So we're probably about $300,000 short of completing the entire site as it was originally designed. So we'll ask for that in the 2016 budget. And the timing will be such that, you know, if the council approves it, then it'll look like a seamless project. But we're just a little bit short of completing the entire site.
Yeah, and some are also questioning, why didn't we figure a park and ride here? If not here, then where would something like that go? I mean, if we want to get people on the bus, we need to get them their cars to a bus stop.
So we did talk about it, and there will be some parking stalls in and around the center. There'll be at least 25, and there's potentially another 25 where the future building would go, where we'd set up some temporary stuff. But so there's two schools of thought. Do we intercept people somewhere else, or do we bring them into the Snyderville, you know, into Kimball Junction that's already congested? Or do we find another, like, satellite area where we can develop some parking? There's also opportunities in the future to look at, you know, co-developing parking stalls with the Boyer Company in and around that area, depending on how that develops out. So parking in the future was something we'll talk about and finish planning for. But we still need a place for all the buses to come and so we can maximize the efficiency of our system.
Yeah. There was some talk at one point, though, about the Interstate 80 off-ramps and on-ramps being redone to kind of avoid that area. Is that a possibility, or is that just pie in the sky?
So that there's been a new interchange in our Snyderville Basin Transportation Master Plan for some time now. And recently we've been in talks with UDOT about various subjects, and the subject of a new interchange keeps coming up, so it's definitely in their planning eyes as well. Where that exactly is, it's yet to be determined, but it's still, you know, quite a ways down the road before it actually would be built. But at least in the planning stages, we're looking at it.
Mm-hmm. So again, if we're not going to build the park and ride there at Kimball Junction, what are some other likely places for it to go?
Well, there was a concept that, you know, possibly we could look at using the view area that's constructed along 80. That's just one potential. We haven't done a lot of analysis yet to find an exact spot, but there's a few open areas, but not a whole lot.
And then any idea off the top of your head how many spots we have at that Jeremy Park and Ride, which, you know, went kind of unused for a while, but it seems like every time I go by, it's full.
Yeah, it is. It's being used a lot more than I ever thought it would be. But there's about, I'm going to guess, somewhere around 50 spaces.
Okay, so we know there's certainly a need for at least 50 spaces. And there's that opportunity then with the transit center?
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, and we've had other requests from the Summit Park area to develop a similar facility. And we'll be looking at that kind of stuff with the short-range transit plan that Park City and Summit County are currently going through.
All right. The Canyons Resort Transportation Planning, the staff report seemed to indicate that there's a few areas where Canyons is short on information or action. What are you looking for from them?
We're trying to find and develop some measurable goals and how we actually measure them. In their transportation plan, they've got some really innovative ideas and ways that we can help minimize traffic in and out of the canyons. But what we were looking for were, how would we actually measure that? If we can measure it, then what are our goals? And if we don't meet the goal, then what's the next step? So it's mostly how do we measure it that we're trying to get a handle on.
Okay. Anything else that you think people ought to know about the transportation planning?
The other big one, I think Tom Fisher, our manager, will announce to the council the selection of the county transportation planner at tomorrow night's meeting. We've selected Caroline Ferris, and she makes her home in the Snyderville Basin, and so she has some firsthand knowledge of the transportation issues that the county's been working on. And we look forward to her insights and experience.
Yeah, good. She sat in some of those traffic jams. Perfect. Hey, let's see. Anita, anything, the discussion on the county fair, anything new here, or just a review of what's going on?
Yes, the Travis English, who is our fair manager, he wants to discuss with the council what will be happening at the Summit County Fair. The fair begins with the Demo Derby on August the 1st through the 8th. And we, this year, I guess, probably what the fair board is most excited about is we have a carnival, a mini carnival. So, because year after year, that is something we've been told is there's not a lot for the younger kids to participate or to do. So we'll have a carnival available, and then the county council on Saturday will be doing their free ice cream social, and this is at 11 o'clock right after the parade. Gives people an opportunity to come and talk to their council members. So we try to keep the fair consistent as far as agricultural being a high value of the fair, but we hope people will come and enjoy a week full of activities. And they can find what those activities are on our Summit County website.
Okay. Any new development on finding a new fair site?
We're still working on that, but there's nothing that I can discuss at the current time.
Okay. Hey, Anita and Derek, thanks for your time this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Well, the Mountain Accord, 30 years in the making, was unanimously approved by the Executive Committee yesterday. In the studio with details, I have a member of the Executive Committee and Park City Council member, Andy Bierman. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, Leslie.
So any discussion before the Accord? You know, before you took the vote?
Well, over the last couple of days, certainly there's been some details we had to iron out, particularly with the ski resorts and the environmental groups. So there was a little bit of back and forth and changes being made, little refinements all the way until an hour before we met. But as far as the discussion goes, I think there were a few concerns expressed, but everybody agreed to. There was full consent on this, and there were no conditions. So we were really pleased that we'd done so much groundwork that we were able to resolve all those in advance.
So anything you personally weren't too happy but went ahead and just swallowed because you wanted to go along with the group?
I got to say I'm pretty happy where we ended up. It's been a big and messy democratic process, but in the end, I think we got it right because it reflects what we heard from our citizens.
Yeah. So there's going to be a ceremonial signing of this. It was just agreed to, I guess, on paper at this
point.
Yeah,
we had the vote, but there will be an actual signing in about 2 weeks.
So why was this vote so important?
It's really a milestone. There has never been a comprehensive plan for the Central Wasatch that has been agreed upon by all these parties. I think they said over the last 30 years there's been over 80 studies that we've looked at things we should do for the Wasatch, but never before have we been able to get together all of the people that have authority over these areas and get them to agree to a plan that we can actually implement.
Yeah. News reports, though, saying that there are still plenty of controversial issues undecided. So when do those issues get decided?
I don't know if I'd say there are plenty, but there are certainly some if-thens in the agreement. For example, Alta owns Grizzly Gulch, which is an area that's very controversial. Alta's proposed putting lifts up there and connecting over to Big Cottonwood Canyon, and so the environmental and rec groups are very opposed to that. Alta has offered to put Grizzly Gulch into a conservation easement or to swap it over to the Forest Service for further protections if they get the transportation infrastructure they want and if they can do some land swaps which enhance their base areas. And those are areas that still need to be worked out, so the swaps can't be proposed until the details are resolved on that.
Hmm. We are going to study, but no commitment to put rail service up Little Cottonwood Canyon. But again, concern with that. I mean, people are just saying, let's just do buses. Heck with a study.
Yeah, no, certainly there are people on all sides of the equation that don't want to study the areas they don't like. But what we're committed to is taking a broad look at a variety of modes and other systems. Bus is certainly something we've suggested, a Zion-like shuttle model, something we've suggested, rail, something we're going to look at. But part of our agreement is to all agree to let the science dictate that. We're going to study the alignments, we're going to study the modes, and then we're going to make some recommendations based upon what the data shows us.
All right, and we're still going to talk about that tunnel between Big Cottonwood and Little Cottonwood Canyon. That's definitely on the study list.
That is on the study list.
Part of the NEPA process
that will be
as
part
well?
of the NEPA study.
But what won't be part of that NEPA study is the tunnel from Big Cottonwood to Park City.
Yeah, that's been removed from the discussion. There will be, there's been a little bit of confusion because we do plan to continue with a study, a non-NEPA study. This is just, that's going to look at economics and carrying capacity and what the impacts might be should future decision makers want to connect Park City to the Cottonwood Canyons. That's not going to be looking at specific engineering or modes. It will look at a broad set of modes, anything from aerial to rail to auto to restricted bus use across there. But really the question that's being asked is what would happen if we connect those communities and those rec centers.
Yeah, also Nathan Rafferty of Ski Utah says that one Wasatch, and this is the proposal to put ski lifts between the Wasatch resorts, is not dead. So we've been talking about that it is dead because this basically Mountain Accord would kill it. So is it dead or not?
Well, one Wasatch, Nathan was very clear at the beginning it was a concept. When he came out with this, he said, this is what the ski resorts would like to do, and this is what it could look like. When he says one Wasatch isn't dead, he's saying there are other ways we can connect our resorts, and that may be through bus or rail at this point, as opposed to those aerial connections that were initially proposed. So he is correct. There is another approach to it, and he's been consistent throughout the process saying we're open to a variety of approaches.
All right. As part of the accord, ski resorts agreeing to a land swap, giving up about 2,100 acres in return for 760 acres of federal land there in the canyon bottoms. So this would limit development to the base of the resort. So what about Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong's concern that in the event of climate change, the resorts may need those upper peaks to stay in business, especially along the ridge line here?
That could be one concern. I don't know if that's the monitor bowls, which are in the Summit County side, are somewhat isolated in advanced terrain. So I don't think that's going to make or break a resort experience. And I think the resorts have decided that it's more important to them to have an effective transportation system. And water has also been part of this deal for snowmaking, which is increasingly a concern for the resorts with climate change. And they decided to focus on those areas as well as consolidating their bases as opposed to maximizing their overall expansion. That was their trade-off.
All right. So this did not resolve the controversy between Snowbird and Utah County about land in American Fork Canyon. So that just will be decided later. Is that
What we decided to do with that was remove it from the accord as a proposal. It has been an ongoing negotiation between Snowbird and Utah County for years at this point, and we have encouraged them to continue with their discussions and come back to us if they reach resolution. But at this point, it's in the hands of the Utah County Council and their local municipalities to decide how they'd like to proceed.
All right. The accord also will create a national conservation and recreation area. Is that kind of a new term, or is that just
a new term. We've been bantering around a number of ones, and I'm not actually sure if that's the final conclusion because we were just in D.C. talking with some decision makers about what the best title will be. The more important thing is we do want a designation that gives it a higher level of protection, and part of that designation is going to be the plan that goes with it, which is going to be congressionally determined, and that's going to include further protections on those lands.
So the visit to D.C. was to talk specifically about that or funding or, I mean,
it was really an opportunity for us to give a preview to our congressional delegation, what the accord's looking like, who's supporting it. But yes, the first legislation that we'll lead off is the land swaps and the federal land designation.
So you have buy-in from the congressional delegation?
We were pleased with their support. They were very happy that we have built such broad consensus. It makes their job much easier when all the decision makers are supportive. They do want to hear more from the state to make sure the state's on board with it. But yeah, we thought it was a productive trip, and we look forward to seeing where we can go with this.
Did you talk about money, though, in terms of funding some of these transportation ideas?
That really wasn't a big discussion point because we were focused at this point on the federal designation.
All right. So what happens from here?
what happens from here? Well, we've got our signing in a couple of weeks. I think we're going to have some fun with that. And we're working out the detail on our two NEPA processes, the one being the Cottonwood Canyons, which is going to be a fairly complicated one, working with the FTA and the Forest Service on how they want to deal with both the land swaps and the transportation. And then we have the I-80 and 224 corridor, which we're working on what's called an alternatives analysis, which is kind of a streamlined NEPA process to look at how we can best address our transportation needs all the way from the airport into Park City. And so we need to work out the details on those, and we're going to start moving forward with it as soon as possible.
And you've got the money to do that now? I know $450,000 coming from Summit Park
City.
And
you know, the state has been very supportive, and I believe they've committed to funding us for the next couple of years, somewhere between $3 and $5 million a year. So combining that with the money we've raised from the local entities, we should have the money to move all these things forward and start implementing.
Okay. Well, congratulations for getting it through.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's 8:55 now. Good morning. Well, singer and guitarist Warren Haynes and the jam-packed powerhouse Government Mule in Park City this week, performing Thursday at Deer Valley Snow Park Outdoor Amphitheater with a preview of the show. I have on the phone with me Warren Haynes. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So is this your first time to Park City?
No, it's been a while, but I've been there a couple of times before.
Okay. Of course, you co-founded Government Mule in the mid-1990s. You've been kept busy, though, playing with other bands, the Allman Brothers, some of the Grateful Dead reform bands. So just to keep playing, huh?
Well, it's what I do, yeah. I've been playing music pretty much all my life. Government Mule just celebrated our 20th anniversary, and it's kind of hard to believe that it's been that long.
Yeah. So the band, Government Mule, described as Southern rock. Is that how you would describe it, or classic rock, or does it need a title?
I would probably prefer no description, but we definitely don't feel like we belong under the heading of Southern rock, just because our influences run much differently from that. But and especially, I'm the only one in the band that's really from the southern part of the United States. Originally, we were a trio, and Alan Woody and myself were full-time members of the Allman Brothers. Woody's from Tennessee, I'm from North Carolina, but our drummer, Matt Apps, was an Army brat born in Oklahoma, raised in New York and California. So I guess, you know, it's okay to fit into a category of some sort, but I don't think that's what we would consider ourselves.
All right, so what are we going to hear on Thursday? I mean, I guess some of the favorites, some that you've played with other groups and then Government Mules, some maybe from your new album, Ashes to Dust?
Well, Ashes and Dust is coming out July 24th, and it's my third solo record, but I keep the repertoires separate. So Government Mule's repertoire and my solo repertoire completely different. So we'll be doing Government Mule songs, and since it's been so long since we've been to Park City, we'll probably just write a set list that spans our entire career and does a little bit of each era. One thing that I can point out is that Government Mule is one of these bands that does a completely different set list every night. So what we play, as an example, in Boise before we come there, and what we just played in Arizona will be completely different than what we play in Wyoming and anywhere else. You know, when we get to Utah, we'll be playing something based on what we played the last few nights, but whatever we feel like playing.
Well, I love this quote. According to Rolling Stone's 2015 readers poll for the 10 best jam bands, in which Government Mule is ranked number 7, it says, "If they ever get around to making a jam band Hall of Fame, Warren Haynes really deserves his own wing." Is that what music is all about for you, just kind of getting lost of it and then kind of making your way back home as a jam band?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're coming from this jazz philosophy of improvisational music being extremely rewarding, and so improv is a huge part of what we do, and I guess that makes us a jam band. But we love approaching music the way we do. It's one of the things that keeps us excited about performing night after night after night, and that's one of the reasons we do a different set list every night, is to make it inspiring for the band. We feel like if we're inspired, then we can inspire the audience as well.
Oh, great. We look forward to hearing you on Thursday. I'm going to take us into NPR News with a cutoff of your self-titled first album, Government Mule. This is the song Mule from 1995. So travel safely, and we'll see you on Thursday, Warren.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to KPCW Park City.
Hey, you try, but you just can't help yourself. Wanna feel special? Make you feel like everybody else. Take away your freedom. Strip away your pride.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.